court ruling resurrects an 8-year-old case regarding a Ten Commandments monument at the Arkansas State Capitol. An upcoming workshop aims to teach Arkansans how to preserve their history, and two fierce rivals battle it out on the soccer pitch in Northwest Arkansas. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the Natural State. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. A new ruling over the Ten Commandments statue on the Arkansas State Capitol grounds resurrects an 8-year lawsuit over religious rights and freedoms. Little Rock Public Radio's Jesse Lenora has this retrospective.
The Bible doesn't say what type of stone the Ten Commandments were carved into. But ever since the 1956 movie of the same name, Masons have carved them into granite. The statue of the Ten Commandments on the grounds of the Arkansas State Capitol looks identical to the ones in Louisiana, Texas, and Oklahoma, because they're literally clones of statues director Cecil B. DeMille had built to promote his movie.
You are not worthy to receive these Ten Commandments.
Arkansas's two gray half ovals have stood erect since 2018, and according to a federal judge, they've been unconstitutional every day since. The ruling from U.S. District Judge Christine Baker dusts off an 8-year-old lawsuit with a slate of litigants like a coexist bumper sticker. The Reverend Victor Nixon, a Methodist minister who died before the suit could fully resolve.
Baptism in Christ means unity with all the children.
Rabbi Eugene Levy, who led Little Rock's Reform Synagogue.
If they wanted to put God's word up there, they would have to do the original Hebrew, which 1 in 100 people could read.
A pagan named Teresa Dorsey Greider, who said in a statement, "The Constitution protects all persons of belief and non-believers." Several groups like the American Humanist Association, the Arkansas Society of Free Thinkers, and a group called the Freedom From Religion Foundation, whose actual hold music goes like,
"Because there's none like Thomas Jefferson and the wall between church and state."
And of course, the Satanic Temple. All of them say this monument is wrong. Not everyone is Christian. They point to the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment. Quote, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion." And the Satanists made another point. If the Christians get to put up a Ten Commandments statue, we should get to put up our own monument. A 1-ton bronze statue of a goat-headed, winged occult figure named Baphomet.
We think that our monument commemorates what makes America great, and in our case, we believe that that's religious liberty.
If you know this story, you may have watched Hail Satan, the 2019 documentary about the temple and the monument. You're hearing audio from the trailer.
This makes life fun.
State officials have put up a Ten Commandments monument on government property.
Satanists are demanding equal rights.
These Satanists don't seem to actually believe in Satan. They believe in religious pluralism, rejecting tyranny. Satan, who in the Bible told Adam and Eve to eat from the fruit of knowledge, is just a metaphor. The group, and this is a big plot point in the documentary, spent several years in tribulation with a politically outspoken former state senator, the deeply religious Jason Rupert.
These people, as I say, they operate as great accusers. And so I believe they definitely are influenced by what I would call evil.
Rupert passed the bill to build the statue when he was in the state legislature. On the phone with Little Rock Public Radio, he described the Satanic Temple as ridiculous.
They are no more religion than a couple guys sitting on a sidewalk spouting off crazy epithets.
The verdict, finding the monument unconstitutional, mentions Rupert over 160 times. Large sections of it quote Rupert directly. Twitter posts, Facebook posts, his public speeches. Rupert says the Ten Commandments aren't explicitly religious. They have historical relevance that transcends Christianity. Don't steal, don't kill. These are universal legal principles. He points out correctly that Moses is inscribed on the walls of the U.S. Supreme Court. This is true, but so were quotes from Confucius, along with medieval Greek and Roman lawgivers. Judge Baker thought Rupert's history explanation was a cover story. He may claim the monument celebrates law, but his public statements show he wants to celebrate Christianity. Satanic Temple co-founder Lucian Greaves responded.
He always rises to the bait, and I feel like that undid him in the end.
He says Rapert walked into traps the Satanic Temple set up. They would publicly comment on the statue. Rapert would respond. The response would confess a non-historical philosophy behind the monument, and so it goes.
The more one could get him to speak, the further he dug the hole.
But hold on. This case isn't over. It's been 8 years since the monument first went up. And since then, a lot has changed in America. In the 70s, a court case over tax money in Catholic schools created the Lemon Test, the three-pronged rule to determine if a public religious thing is unconstitutional. One, does it have a secular purpose? Two, does it have a neutral effect on people's ability to practice their religion? And three, does it tangle religion into government? To pass the Lemon Test, all three should be no. The Lemon Test is mentioned over 40 times in Judge Baker's ruling. In her conclusion, she says the monument violates the Establishment Clause set forth under Lemon. But in 2019, after the Arkansas Commandments Monument is built, but before the new ruling was issued, the Supreme Court basically killed the Lemon Test. In a case over whether to leave up a veteran's memorial in the shape of a cross, they said yes, it can stay. The opinion was 7-2. Writing for the majority, Justice Samuel Alito said, quote, "Scrubbing away any reference to the divine will strike many as aggressively hostile to religion." He says the constitutionality of a monument should be measured by references to historical practices and understandings. So that's the new Lemon Test. And then came the Joe Kennedy case.
All right, a major win for religious liberty today at the U.S. Supreme Court.
The high school football coach fired for praying at the 50-yard line had to be rehired. The Supreme Court said his termination was unconstitutional.
Joe, first of all, coach, congratulations to you. How do you feel about it?
I'm still trying to get accustomed to, oh my gosh, we actually won.
Talking to the plaintiffs in the case, the ones against the monument, they generally feel like a judge just told them the sky is blue. There's a collective sense of, well, duh.
We were confident that the court would ultimately side with us.
The law is firmly on our side. The facts are firmly on our side.
There's very little foundation in law for Arkansas's argument for having this standalone Ten Commandments monument.
They say the Ten Commandments monument on the state capitol is clearly un-American. But Rapert views new legal precedent with the same confidence.
And so I believe we'll be successful at the appellate level at the Eighth Circuit. And hey, if by some odd chance it wasn't, I believe the United States Supreme Court is very capable of reminding Judge Baker that they said the Lemon Test shall not be used in the manner that you are claiming it should be.
In a statement, Arkansas Secretary of State Cole Jester said his office will keep fighting for the monument in court. The statue will stay up while the ruling waits appeal.
That was Little Rock Public Radio's Josie Lenora reporting. The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program will hold a training seminar regarding the National Register of Historic Places Saturday, April 25th at 9 a.m. at the Arkansas Department of Parks, Heritage, and Tourism headquarters in Little Rock. KASU's Marty Scarborough spoke with Ralph Wilcox, National Register and Survey Coordinator and Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer for the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program.
Well, first, before we talk about this upcoming seminar, tell me and our listeners a little bit about the mission and work of the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program.
The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program is involved in a lot of different aspects of historic preservation in the state. Of course, we do the National Register of Historic Places. We also do architectural survey, which is where we go out and document buildings and structures and cemeteries and related resources for our archives. We also have some grant programs that we administer. Some for specifically for courthouses around the state. And then we also have one that is for other properties that are listed on the National Register. We also have a person on staff who specializes in cemeteries that can help constituents with issues they may have with cemeteries. We also review any federal projects in the state that get funding or licensing or permitting to make sure that they don't impact historic resources around the state. So we are a wide-reaching agency within the state government.
Well, many people have probably heard of the National Register of Historic Places, and the name seems kind of self-explanatory, but could you please tell us what the register actually is?
Sure. It's a program that was created in 1966, so it's been around 60 years this year. It is a way to recognize resources around the country that are worthy of preservation. It is a program that recognizes buildings, structures, cemeteries. Other interesting properties listed on the National Register include, for example, the USS Razorback submarine here in North Little Rock. It's on the National Register. So it's a way to recognize resources in the built environment, that are significant to the country's history.
Well, you mentioned the USS Razorback. What are some other well-known and perhaps maybe lesser-known places in Arkansas that are on the register?
Some of the better known places, for example, the Old State House here in Little Rock is on the National Register. The State Capitol is also on the National Register. Some of the more obscure ones, some of the listeners may be familiar with the telephone booth in Prairie Grove. That is actually on the National Register. It's the first one in the country that was put on the National Register. We also, Thorncrown Chapel, which a lot of people probably know in Eureka Springs, is also on the National Register. So it's a really a cross section of, our architectural history.
And how many places in Arkansas approximately are on the National Register?
I think that there are approximately 2,500 or 3,000 National Register listed properties. That includes individual properties, but also includes historic districts, which have hundreds of resources in a lot of those districts. But as far as listings, it's about 2,500 to 3,000.
Tell us a little bit about what's going to be shared at this training session on the 25th.
Sure. The training session on the 25th is going to be divided into two parts. The first part of the seminar will give people some background information about the National Register of Historic Places, the types of properties that can be listed on the National Register, what National Register listing means for a property owner, also what it doesn't mean. One of the big misconceptions we deal with is that people think that if a property is on the National Register, it has restrictions. It can't be demolished or altered. And that's not the case. It's strictly an honorary designation. So it will go through some of those types of things. The second part of the seminar, we will actually walk through the National Register nomination form and kind of explain to people how to fill it out if they are interested in having a property listed on the National Register.
Okay. Well, I'd like to elaborate just a little bit on a few of those points, just a little bit more.
Sure.
Is how challenging, first of all, is it to get onto the register? How much of a process is there, and what's the criteria to be considered and placed onto the register?
It is a lengthy process. The average time from start to finish is probably between 6 months to a year. The nomination goes through several levels of review. It's reviewed by our staff here in Little Rock. There's also a governor-appointed board that looks at the nominations, and they're ultimately reviewed by the National Park Service. And it's the National Park Service that makes the final determination that, yes, a property is eligible for listing. As far as the criteria, as a general rule, a property needs to be at least 50 years old, and it has to be significant for historical associations with a trend or an event, associations with a significant person, architecture or design, or significance in the fact that it might yield new information about history or prehistory. And that's mainly applied to archaeological sites.
So, these sites that are on the register, are they both public and private properties?
Yes, we have properties around the state that are listed that are state-owned or federally owned, but most of them in the state are privately owned.
So if there is a privately owned piece of property, does the owner of that have to apply, or could someone other than the owner apply for a piece of property to be added to the register?
Anyone can apply, but if it is privately owned, there needs to be owner permission to in order for us or the National Park Service to move forward with the nomination.
So do you need any kind of endorsements, or is there a cost to move through this process?
The National Register process is free. There is no charge. And as far as any kind of endorsement, a lot of times we will receive either an email or a letter from the property owner. A lot of times it's the property owner that initiates the process, but not always. And in those cases where it's not the property owner, we do like to have some kind of written documentation that says, yes, the property owner is okay with it.
Well, what are some of the benefits from having a listing on the National Register of Historic Places?
There are several benefits. One of probably the easiest benefits or nicest is that there is a greater understanding and appreciation, at least I hope, of the history of a community. Sometimes a property gets listed and people never knew the significance or the history or the importance of that property. People always ask about financial incentives. The only financial incentive that's really out there for private property owners is a state tax credit program and a federal tax credit program when a property is renovated, if it's done to certain standards. We do offer some grants, one specifically for courthouses, but we also have another one. But in that case, the property has to be owned by a local municipality, a county government, or a nonprofit organization.
So if something is chosen for the register, is that then a guarantee that it must be maintained and preserved?
No, it is not a guarantee. There are requirements that come about because of National Register listing itself. It's strictly an honorary designation and does not put any restrictions on the property or the property owner.
And that was KASU's Marty Scarborough reporting. With the World Cup just a few months away, American soccer fans are gearing up to watch the best international players take the pitch stateside. And last weekend, fans in Arkansas got their own taste of the action. KUAF's Daniel Carruth has more.
Outside of Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Football Stadium on a Saturday afternoon, late March, music bleeds out of the speakers while onions and peppers sizzle on portable metal stoves. And today, the usual Razorback red is replaced by blue and yellow jerseys as fans stream up Razorback Road in Fayetteville to witness something historic. This is the first time two international soccer teams have played a match inside of Arkansas Razorback Stadium. The Mexican League teams, Tigres and Club America, competed in the so-called Golden Clash this past weekend, a matchup of two of the biggest soccer rivals in Liga Mexico. Numbers from the University of Arkansas ticket office reported nearly 1,900 fans turned out to watch the men's and women's teams face off in this late spring friendly match. Fans like Samu Rodriguez, who drove up about an hour from Van Buren.
I think it's just for the family. You know, we like you said, we have a huge family, so I think it's fun. Good atmosphere. It's always good to be out here and, you know, watching soccer and just being around family. So that's more of like a tradition for all of us. We live about an hour, 45 minutes away from here, so it's pretty close. So it's like, it's huge to be able to see our favorite team come so close to us, and it's nice. I'm pretty sure it's like historical for them too. So it's nice to be part of that history.
He and his family got to the stadium parking lot at 9 a.m. to scope out a tailgate spot with a grill cooking up carnitas, tacos, and salsa.
I think as a kid we dreamed to one day play there, but now to be able to see it and be so close, and not only that, but we got our kids here, and it's nice for them to see that too. And, you know, it's like you said, it's a nice tradition, and not only that, but we inherit that love and that passion into them, and they see how it is familiar-wise. And yeah, it's awesome, man. We love soccer, and the World Cup is coming up too, and Mexico will be doing some good stuff, and USA as well. But yeah, we're just excited that it's here.
Husband and wife Luis and Elizabeth of Fayetteville say they heard about the match 2 months ago when it was announced and almost couldn't believe it was real.
We're like, I got excited. I was like, tell my wife, tell my mom. Yeah. You know, I was like, hey, we gotta go. You know, yeah. We gotta go see.
Oh, for sure. Like supporting our, you know, the Mexican League, supporting our, you know, culture. And then football is a huge part of like what we grew up in. Yeah, it's family. It's good time. And so, yeah.
Ana Sofia is a student at the University of Arkansas and member of Sigma Iota Alpha, the only Latina sorority on the university campus. She says events like this show that Latinos in Northwest Arkansas are a major economic market, which is often untapped.
It's like the Latino community is only getting every couple of spikes. Every couple of spikes. Versus if it were to be a constant spike over and over in a continuous like effort put in, you would see the Latino community in Rogers and Springdale and even Hot Springs fully be invested, and there would be such a huge impact because we already have venues catered towards us. And it's just like making them more mainstream because we are pulling in the numbers. We are pulling actual money into this. Because even it's making a direct and indirect local impact. So you can't tell me that we're not here.
Kevin Estrada is president of the university's Latino fraternity, Phi Iota Alpha, and says he hopes today's games will help to bring in more events like this.
What's really exciting is this is one of the first bigger opportunities that U of A has given out to, like, I guess you would say, like a third party to come in, host their games here. And this is a huge community or huge Latino event. I think it's just like a really nice opportunity to have everyone come in.
The afternoon unfolds like a festival with booths and games for kids just inside the stadium, vendors selling jerseys and flags, and people taking their picture in front of the stadium, decked out in their soccer kits and with big Mexican flags draped over their shoulders. Luis from Fayetteville says moments for joy like this are an oasis in a political climate where Latinos often under threat of discrimination or harassment because of federal immigration enforcement policies.
It's good. It brings a little hope that things, you know, that things can get better, that, you know, that we can find common ground, you know, in the love of the game, and that they, you know, Arkansas and the University of Arkansas is hosting something like that. It's good to see that they are not letting politics affect them, you know, that they are doing what you know, what they think is best, and listening to, like my wife said, to the community, to, you know, like bring the love of soccer to the area. I mean, it's immigration, everything that's going on right now, it's crazy. So, you know, I know that may even affect like some of the turnout today, really, because people might be afraid to come out and show up and support. So, you know, it's a little crazy world right now we're in, but, you know, we're out here supporting for that and many other, and we love the game, and plus, yeah, you know, we want to show up and show that, you know, we're not going to be intimidated like that, you know.
Ultimately, Club America took the win for the women's game, beating Tigres 2-1, and the men's matchup ended up in a 1-1 draw. But for most fans, regardless of who they were rooting for, everyone seems to have left a winner.
America!
Go Tigres!
Viva Mexico!
That was KUAF's Daniel Carruth reporting. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.